most evil thing you could imagine and multiplied by a figure you can't even imagine. Elsa had been very afraid that night, and she had asked Granny what they would do if one day their world crumbled around them. And then Granny had squeezed her forefingers hard and replied, "Then we do what everyone does. We do everything we can." Elsa had crept up into her lap and asked, "But what can we do?" And then Granny had kissed her hair and held her hard, 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 and whispered, "We pick up as many children as we can carry, and we run as fast as we can." "I'm good at running," Elsa had whispered. "Me too," Granny had whispered back. The day Elsa was born, Granny was far away, in a war. She had been there for months, but was on her way to an aircraft, on her way home. That was when she heard about the wave in another place even further away, from which everyone was in desperate flight. So she went because they needed her. She had time to help many children escape death, but not the boys of the woman with the black skirt. So she brought home the woman with the black skirt instead. "That was your grandmother's last journey," says Mum. "She came home after that." Elsa and Mum sit in Kier. It's morning and there's a traffic jam. Snowflakes as big as pillowcases are falling on the windscreen. Elsa can't remember the last time she heard Mum tell such a long story. Mum hardly ever tells stories, but this one was so long that Mum fell asleep in the middle of it last night and had to pick it up in the car on the way to school.
"Why was it her last journey?" asks Elsa.
Mum smiles with an emotional combination of melancholy and joy that only she in the entire world has fully mastered. "She got a new job." And then she looks as if she's remembering something unexpected, as if the memory just fell out of a cracked vase. "You were born prematurely. They were concerned about your heart, so we had to stay at the hospital for several weeks with you. Granny came back with her on the same day we came home." Elsa realizes that she means the woman in the black skirt. Mum clutches Kia's steering wheel hard. "I've never spoken much to her. I don't think anyone in the house wanted to ask too many questions. We let your grandmother handle it, and then..." She sighs, and regret floods her gaze. "Then the years just went by, and we were busy, and now she's just someone who lives in our house. To be quite honest with you, I'd forgotten that was how she first moved in. You two moved in on the same day." Mum turns to Elsa, tries unsuccessfully to smile. "Does it make me a terrible person that I've forgotten?" Elsa shakes her head. She was going to say something about the monster and the worse, but she doesn't because she's worried Mum won't let her see them anymore if she knows. Mums can have a lot of strange principles when it comes to social interaction between their children and monsters and worses. Elsa understands that everyone is scared of them and that it will take a long time to make them all understand that the monster and the worse, like the drunk, are not what they seem.
"How often did Granny go away?" she asks instead.
A silver-coloured car behind them sounds its horn when she allows a space to develop between her and the car in front. Mum releases the brake and Kia slowly rolls forward. "It varied. It depended on where she was needed and for how long."
"Was that what you meant that time Granny said you became an economist just to spite her?"
The car behind them sounds its horn again.
"What?"
Elsa fiddles with the rubber seal in the door.
"I heard you, like a mega long time ago, when Granny said you became an economist because you were in teenage rebellion, and you said, 'How do you know you were never here?' That was what you meant, wasn't it?"
"I was angry, Elsa. Sometimes it's hard to control what you say when you're angry."
"Not you. You never lose control."
Mum tries to smile again. "With your grandmother, it was more difficult."
"How old were you when Grandfather died?"
12.
"And Granny left you?"
"Your grandmother went where she was needed, darling."
"Didn't you need her, though?"
"Others needed her more."
"Is that why you were always arguing?"
Mum sighs deeply as only a parent who has just realised that she has strayed considerably further into a story than she was intending is capable of sighing. Yes, yes, sometimes it was probably for that reason we were arguing, but sometimes it was about other things. Your grandmother and I were very different.
No, you were just different in different ways.
Maybe.
What else did you argue about?
The car behind the Kia beeps its horn again. Mum closes her eyes and holds her breath. And only when she finally releases the handbrake and lets Kia roll forward does she release the word from her lips, as if it had to force its way through. You. We always argued about you, darling.
Why?
Because when you love someone very much, it's difficult to learn to share her with someone else.
Like Jean Grey,
Elsa observes, as if it were absolutely obvious.
Who? A superhero, for X-Men. Wolverine and Cyclops both loved her, so they argued so much about her it was totally insane.
I thought those X-Men were mutants, not superheroes. Isn't that what you said last time we spoke about them?
It's complicated,
says Elsa, even though it isn't really, if one has read enough quality literature. So what kind of superpower does this Jean Grey have, then?
Telepathy.
Good superpower.
Insane.
Elsa nods in agreement. She decides not to point out that Jean Grey can also do telekinetics because she doesn't want to make things more complicated than necessary for Mum right now. She is pregnant, after all. So instead, Elsa pulls the rubber seal on the door, peers down into the gap. She is incredibly tired as an almost 8-year-old gets after staying up all night feeling angry. Elsa's mum never had a mum of her own because Granny was always somewhere else to help someone else. Elsa has never thought of Granny in that way.
Are you angry with me because Granny was so much with me and never with you?
She asks carefully. Mum shakes her head so quickly and vehemently that Elsa immediately understands whatever she's about to say will be a lie.
No, my darling, darling girl, never, never!
Elsa nods and looks down again into the gap in the door.
I'm angry with her for not telling the truth.
Everyone has secrets, darling.
Are you angry with me because Granny and I had secrets?
She thinks about the secret language, which they always spoke so Mum wouldn't understand. She thinks about the land of Almost Awake and wonders if Granny ever took Mum there. Never angry, whispers Mum, and reaches across the seat before she adds in a whisper. Jealous. The feeling of guilt hits Elsa like cold water when you're least expecting it.
So that's what Granny meant, she states.
What did she say? Mum asks. Elsa snorts.
She said I'd hate her if I found out who she was before I was born. That's what she meant. That I'd find out that she was a crappy mum who left her own child.
Mum turns to her with eyes so shiny that Elsa can see her own reflection in them. She didn't leave me. You mustn't hate your granny, darling. And when Elsa doesn't answer, Mum puts her hand against Elsa's cheek and whispers. All daughters are angry with their mothers about something. But she was a good grandmother, Elsa. She was the most fantastic grandmother anyone could imagine. Elsa defiantly pulls at the rubber seal.
But she left you by yourself. All those times she went off, she left you on your own, didn't she?
I had your grandfather when I was small.
Yeah, until he died.
When he died, I had the neighbours.
What neighbours?
Elsa wants to know. The car behind beeps its horn. Mum makes an apologetic gesture at the back window and Kia rolls forward. Brit Marie, says Mum at last. Elsa stops fiddling with the rubber seal in the door.
What do you mean, Brit Marie?
She took care of me. Elsa's eyebrows sink into a scowling V-shape.
So why is she such a nightmare to you now, then?
Don't say that, Elsa.
But she is!
Mum sighs through her nose. Brit Marie wasn't always like that. She's just lonely.
She's got Kent.
Mum blinks so slowly that her eyes are closed. There are many ways of being alone, darling.
Elsa goes back to fiddling with the rubber seal on the door.
She's still an idiot.
People can turn into idiots if they're alone for long enough, nods Mum.
The car behind them beeps its horn again.
Is that why Granny isn't in any of the old photos at home?
Asks Elsa.
What?
Granny isn't in any of the photos from before I was born. When I was small, I thought it was because she was a vampire, because they can't be seen in photos and they can smoke like as much as they want without getting a sore throat. But she wasn't a vampire, was she? She was just never at home.
It's complicated.
Yes, until someone explains it to you. But when I ask Granny about it, she always changes the subject. And when I ask Dad, he says, what do you want? You want an ice cream? You can have an ice cream.
Mum suddenly laughs explosively. Elsa does a mean impersonation of her dad. Your dad doesn't exactly like conflict, Mum giggles.
Was Granny a vampire or not?
Your granny travelled round the world saving children's lives, darling. She was a...
Mum looks as if she's looking for the right word, and once she does, she brightens and smiles radiantly.
A superhero. Your granny was a superhero.
Elsa stares down into the cavity in the door.
Superheroes don't leave their own children.
Mum is silent. All superheroes have to make sacrifices, darling, she tries at last. But both she and Elsa know she doesn't mean it. The car behind them beeps its horn again. Mum's hand shoots up apologetically towards the back window, and Kia rolls forward a few metres. Elsa realizes that she's sitting there hoping Mum will start yelling, or crying, or anything. She just wants to see her feel something. Elsa can't understand how anyone can be in such a hurry to move 5 meters in a traffic jam. She looks in the back mirror at the man in the car behind them. He seems to think the traffic jam is being caused by Elsa's mum. Elsa wishes with every fibre of her being that Mum would do what she did when she was pregnant with Elsa, and get out of the car and roar at the guy and tell him, enough's bloody enough. Elsa's father told that story. He almost never tells stories, but one midsummer's evening, at the time when Mum was looking sadder and sadder, and going to bed earlier and earlier, and Dad sat on his own in the kitchen at night, and reorganised the icons on Mum's computer screen and cried. They were at a party together, all three of them. And then Dad drank 3 beers and told a story about how Mum, while heavily pregnant with Elsa, got out of the car and went up to a man in a silver-coloured car and threatened to give birth here and now on his sodding bonnet if he beat her again. Everyone laughed a lot at that story. Not Dad, of course, because he's not a big fan of laughing. But Elsa saw that even he found it funny. He danced with Mum that midsummer. That was the last time Elsa saw them dancing together. Dad was spectacularly bad at dancing. He looked like a very large bear that had just got up and realized its foot had gone to sleep. Elsa misses it. And she misses someone who gets out and shouts at men in silver-colored cars. The man in the silver-colored car behind them beeps again. Elsa picks up her backpack from the floor, gets out the heaviest book she can find, throws the door open and jumps out onto the motorway. She hears Mum shouting for her to come back, but without turning round, she runs towards the silver-coloured car and slams the book as hard as she can into its bonnet. It leaves a big dent. Elsa's hands are shaking. The man in the silver-coloured car stares at her as if he can't quite believe what just happened.
Enough, you muppet!
When he doesn't answer right away, she slams the book down again 3 more times and points at him menacingly.
Do you get that my mum is pregnant?
At first, the man looks as if he's going to open the door, but then he seems to change his mind and watches in amazement as she pummels the bonnet with her book. Elsa hears the click of the doors locking.
1 more peep and my mum will come out and give birth to Harvey on your bloody bonnet, roars Elsa.
She stays where she is on the motorway between the silver-coloured car and Kia, hyperventilating until she gets a headache. She hears Mum yelling, and Elsa is actually on her way back into Kia. She really is. It's not as if she planned all this. But then she feels a hand on her shoulder, and a voice asking,
Do you need help?
And when she turns round, there's a policeman standing over her.
Can we help you?
he says again in a friendly tone of voice. He looks very young, as if he's only working as a policeman as a summer job, even though it's winter.
He keeps beeping his horn at us,
Elsa says defensively. The summer intern policeman looks at the man in the silver-coloured car. The man inside the car is now terrifically busy not looking back. Elsa turns towards Kia, and she really doesn't mean to say it. It's almost as if the words accidentally fall out of her mouth.
My mum's about to give birth and we're sort of having a hard day here.
Your mother's in labour? He asks, visibly tightening.
I mean, it's not...
Elsa begins, but of course it's too late. The policeman runs up to Kia. Mum has started getting out with great effort and is on her way towards them with her hand against Harfi.
Are you able to drive or,
shouts the policeman so loudly that Elsa irately shoves her fingers in her ears and moves demonstratively to the other side of Kia. Mum looks slightly as if she's been caught on the back foot.
What? Or what? Of course I can drive. Or what? Is there something...
I'll go on ahead,
yells the policeman without listening to the end of the sentence, shoving Mum back into Kia and running back to his patrol car. Mum thumps back into the seat, looks at Elsa. Elsa searches the glove compartment for a reason not to have to look back at her. The patrol car thunders past with its sirens turned on. The summer intern policeman waves frantically at them to follow behind.
I think he wants you to follow him,
mumbles Elsa without looking up. What's going on? Whispers Mum while Kia carefully potters along behind the patrol car.
I guess he's escorting us to the hospital because he thinks you're about to, you know, give birth,
mumbles Elsa into the glove compartment.
Why did you tell him I was about to give birth?
I didn't, but no one ever listens to me.
Right, and what should I do now, do you think? Hisses Mum back and sounds possibly a bit less self-controlled now.
Well, I've been driving behind him for ages now, so he'll probably get quite pissed if he finds out you're not actually going to give birth for real,
Elsa states pedagogically.
Oh, really? You think so?
Mum roars in a way that is neither pedagogical nor especially self-controlled. Elsa chooses not to enter into a discussion on whether Mum is being sarcastic or ironic there. They stop outside the hospital's accident and emergency entrance, and Mum attempts to get out of the car and confess everything to the summer intern policeman. But he pushes her back into the car and yells that he's going to fetch help. Mum looks mortified. This is her hospital. She's the boss here. This is going to be a nightmare to explain to the staff, she mumbles and rests her forehead in despair against the steering wheel.
Maybe you could say it was some sort of exercise,
Elsa suggests. Mum doesn't answer. Elsa clears her throat again.
Granny would have thought this was fun.
Mum smiles faintly and turns her head so her ear is on the steering wheel. They look at each other for a long time. She would have found it bloody funny, nods Mum.
Don't swear, says Elsa.
You're always swearing.
I'm not a mum.
Mum smiles again. Touché. Elsa opens and closes the glove compartment a few times, looks up at the hospital facade. Behind one of those windows, she slept in the same bed as Granny the night Granny went off to Miami's for the last time. It feels like forever ago. Feels like forever since Elsa managed to get to Miami's on her own.
What job was it?
She asks, mainly so she doesn't have to think about it. What? Mum exclaims.
You said that thing with the tsunami was Granny's last journey, because she had found a new job. What job was it?
Mum's fingertips brush against Elsa's when she whispers the answer. As a grandmother. She got a job as a grandmother. She never went away again. Elsa nods slowly. Mum caresses her arm. Elsa opens and closes the glove compartment. Then she looks up as if she's just thought of something, but mostly because she'd like to change the subject, because she doesn't want to think about how angry she is with Granny right now.
Did you and Dad get divorced because you ran out of love?
She asks so quickly that the question actually surprises her. Mum leans back, pulls her fingers through her hair and shakes her head. Why are you asking? Elsa shrugs.
We have to talk about something while we're waiting for the policeman to come back with the people you're the boss of and everything gets mega embarrassing for you.
Mum looks unhappy again. Elsa fiddles with the rubber seal, realizes that it was obviously too early to start making jokes about it.
Don't people get married because they're full of love and then divorced when they run out of it?
She says in a low voice. Did you learn that one in school?
It's my own theory.
Mum laughs very loudly without any early warning. Elsa grins.
Did Grandad and Granny run low on love as well?
She asks when Mum has finished laughing. Mum dabs her eyes. They were never married, darling.
Why not?
Your granny was special, Elsa. She was difficult to live with.
How do you mean?
Mum massages her eyelids. It's difficult to explain, but in those days it can't have been so common for women to be like her. I mean, it can't have been so common for anyone to be like her. It wasn't common for women to become doctors in those days, for example. As for surgeons, forget it. The academic world would have been quite different, so... Mum goes quiet. Elsa raises her eyebrows as a way of telling her to get to the point. I think if your granny had been a man of her generation rather than a woman, she would have been called a playboy. Elsa is silent for a long while. Then she nods soberly.
Did she have many boyfriends?
Yes, says Mum cautiously.
There's someone in my school who has many boyfriends, states Elsa.
Oh, well, I wouldn't want to suggest that the girl in your school is a... says Mum, feverishly backtracking.
He's a boy,
Elsa corrects. Mum looks confused. Elsa shrugs.
It's complicated, she says.
Even though it really isn't. But Mum doesn't look massively less confused. Your granddad loved your granny very much, but they were never a couple. Do you understand?
I get it,
says Elsa, because she has the internet. Then she reaches out and takes Mum's index fingers and squeezes them in her hands.
I'm sorry that Granny was a crappy mum, Mum.
She was a fantastic grandmother, Elsa. You were all her second chances, says Mum, and caresses Elsa's hair as she goes on. I think your grandmother functioned so well in chaotic places because she was herself chaotic. She was always amazing in the midst of a catastrophe. It was just all this everyday life and normality that she didn't quite know how to handle. And it was just, I mean, the reason there aren't any old photos of Granny is partly because she wasn't home very often, and slightly because I tore up all the ones there were.
Why?
I was a teenager and angry. The two belonged together. There was always chaos at home. Bills that didn't get paid and food that went off in the fridge when we actually had food, and sometimes no food at all. And, oh God, it's hard to explain, darling, I was just angry. Elsa crosses her arms and leans back in her seat and glares out of the window.
People shouldn't have children if they don't want to take care of them.
Mum reaches out, touches her shoulder with her fingertips. Your granny was old when she had me. Or what I mean is she was as old as I was when I had you. But that was old in Granny's time. And she didn't think she could have children. She'd had herself tested. Elsa presses her chin down over her wishbone.
So you were a mistake?
An accident.
In that case, I'm an accident as well.
Mum's lips folded in on themselves. No one has ever wanted something as much as your father and I wanted you, darling. You're about as far from an accident as anyone can get. Elsa looks up at Kia's ceiling and blinks the haziness out of her eyes.
Is that why order is your superpower, because you don't want to be like Granny?
Mum shrugs. I taught myself to fix things on my own, that's all. Because I didn't trust your grandmother. In the end, things were even worse when she was actually here. I was angry at her when she was away, and even angrier when she was home.
I'm angry too. I'm angry because she lied about being sick and no one told me, and now I know and I still miss her, and that makes me angry.
Mum shuts her eyelids tight and puts her forehead against Elsa's forehead. Elsa's jaw is trembling.
I'm angry with her for dying. I'm angry with her for dying and disappearing from me, she whispers.
Me too, whispers Mum. And that is when the summer intern policeman comes charging out of the emergency doors. He has two nurses with a stretcher running behind him. Elsa turns a few centimetres towards Mum. Mum turns a few centimetres towards Elsa.
What do you think your granny would have done now? Asks Mum calmly. She would have cleared out, says Elsa, still with her forehead against Mum's forehead.
The summer intern policeman and the nurses with the stretcher are only a few metres from the car when Mum slowly nods. Then she puts Kia into gear, and with the tyres spinning in the snow, skids out into the road and drives off. It's the most irresponsible thing Elsa has ever seen her mother do. She'll always love her for it.
Chapter 15. Wood Shavings. Perhaps the most curious of all the curious creatures in the land of Almost Awake, even by Granny's yardstick, are the regretters. They are wild animals living in herds, whose grazing areas are just outside Miamis, where they forage widely and really nobody knows how they survive, considering the circumstances. At first sight, regretters look more or less like white horses, although they are far more ambivalent and suffer from the biological defect of never being able to make up their minds. This obviously causes certain practical problems because regretters are flock animals, and one regret therefore almost always crashes into another when heading off in one direction and then changing its mind. For this reason, regretters always have enormous, oblong swellings on their foreheads, which in various fairy tales from Miamis that have ended up in the real world has made people consistently get them confused with unicorns. But in Miamis, the storytellers learned the hard way not to cut costs by hiring a regretter to do the job of a unicorn, because whenever they did, the fairy tales had a tendency never to get to the point. And also no one at all, feels good after standing behind a regretter in the queue for the lunch buffet.
So there's no point changing your mind, all you get is a headache,
Granny used to say, smacking herself on the forehead. Elsa thinks about that now, sitting in Kia outside school and looking at Mum. She wonders if Granny ever regretted all the times she left Mum. She wonders if Granny's head was full of bumps. She hopes so. Mum is massaging her temples and swearing repeatedly through gritted teeth. She is obviously regretting speeding away from the hospital like that, since the first thing she has to do after dropping Elsa off at the school is drive straight back to the hospital so she can go to work. Elsa pats her on the shoulder.
Maybe you can blame it on your baby brain.
Mum shuts her eyes in resignation. She's had rather too much baby brain lately. So much so that she could not even find Elsa's Gryffindor scarf when they looked for it this morning, and so much so that she keeps putting her telephone in strange places. In the refrigerator, and in the rubbish bin, and the laundry basket, and on one occasion in George's jogging shoes. This morning, Elsa had to call Mum's telephone 3 times, which is not entirely uncomplicated, as the display on Elsa's telephone is quite fuzzy after its encounter with the toaster. But in the end, they found Mum's telephone ringing inside Elsa's backpack. The Gryffindor scarf was also there. You see, Mum tried to say, nothing is really gone until your Mum can't find it. But Elsa rolled her eyes, and then Mum looked ashamed of herself and mumbled, it's my baby brain, I'm afraid. She looks ashamed of herself now as well, and full of regret. Darling, I don't think they'll let me be the head of a hospital if I tell them I had a police escort to accident and emergency. Elsa reaches out and pats Mum on the cheek.
It'll get better, Mum. It'll be fine.
Granny used to say that, Elsa realizes as soon as she says it. Mum puts her hand on Harfy and nods with fake self-assurance in order to change the subject. Your dad will pick you up this afternoon, don't forget. And George will take you to school on Monday. I have a conference then, and... Elsa patiently gives Mum's head a scratch.
I'm not going to school on Monday, Mum. It's the Christmas holidays.
Mum put her hand on Elsa's hand and inhales deeply from the point where they're touching, as if trying to fill her lungs with Elsa. as mums do with daughters who grow up too fast. "Sorry, darling, I forgot."
"It doesn't matter," says Elsa,
even though it does a little. They hug each other hard before Elsa hops out of the car. She waits until Kia has disappeared before she opens her backpack and gets out Mum's mobile, then scrolls to Dad's name in the address book and sends him an SMS.
"Actually, there is no need for you to pick up Elsa this afternoon. I can manage it."
Elsa knows this is how they talk about her. She is something that needs to be picked up or sorted, like doing the laundry. She knows they mean no harm by it, but come on, no 7-year-old who has seen films about the Italian mafia wants to be sorted by her family. Mum's mobile vibrates in Elsa's hand. She sees Dad's name on the display, and underneath, "I understand." Elsa deletes it, and deletes the SMS she sent to Dad from the outgoing messages, then stands on the pavement, counting down from 20. When she's got to 7, Kia screeches back into the parking area and Mum, slightly out of breath, winds down the window. Elsa gives her the mobile. Mum mumbles, "It's my baby brain." Elsa kisses her on the cheek. Mum touches her throat and asks if Elsa has seen her scarf.
"In your right-hand coat pocket," says Elsa.
Mum pulls the scarf out, takes Elsa's head in her hands and pulls her closer and kisses her forehead very hard. Elsa closes her eyes.
"Nothing is really gone until your daughter can't find it,"
she whispers into Mum's ear.
"You're going to be a fantastic big sister,"
Mum whispers back. Elsa doesn't answer. She just stands there waving as Kia drives off. She couldn't answer because she doesn't want Mum to know that she doesn't want to be a big sister. Doesn't want anyone to know that she is this horrible person who hates her own half-sibling just because Halfie is going to be more loved by them than Elsa. Doesn't want anyone to know she's afraid. They'll abandon her. She turns round and looks into the playground. No one has seen her yet. She reaches into her backpack and gets out the letter she found in Renault. She doesn't recognize the address, and Granny was always terrible at giving directions. Elsa isn't even sure this address exists in real life, because quite often when Granny was explaining where things were, she used landmarks that were no longer there.
"It's right by where those morons with the budgerigars lived. Past the old tennis club, down where the old rubber factory or whatever it was used to be," she'd ramble on, and when people didn't get exactly what she was talking about, Granny got so frustrated that she had to smoke 2 cigarettes one after the other, lighting the second by the embers of the first. And then when someone said she couldn't do that indoors, she got so angry that it was utterly impossible after that to get any decent directions out of her. Impossible, in fact, to get anything except her expletive middle finger. Really, what Elsa wanted to do was rip the letter into 10,000 pieces and let the wind blow it all away. That was what she had decided last night, because she was angry at Granny. But now, after Mama's told her the whole story and Elsa has seen all that brokenness in Mum's eyes, she's made the decision not to do that. Elsa is going to deliver the letter, this and all the other letters Granny has left for her. This is going to be a grand adventure and a monstrous fairy tale, just as Granny planned it. But Elsa isn't doing it for Granny's sake. First of all, she's going to need a computer. She looks at the playground again, and at the precise moment when the bell goes and everyone turns away from the street, she runs past the fence towards the bus stop. Gets off one stop later, runs into the shop, and goes straight to the ice cream counter, then back to the house, where she sneaks into the cellar storage unit and buries her face in the Worser's fur. It's her new favourite place on earth.
"I've got ice cream in the bag,"
she says at last when she lifts her head. The Worser points its nose with interest.
"It's Ben and Jerry's New York Super Fudge Chunk, my favourite,"
Elsa elaborates. The Worser has eaten more than half the ice cream before she reaches the end of that sentence. She caresses its ears.
"I just have to get hold of a computer, stay here and, you know, try to stay out of sight."
The Worser looks at her like a very big Worser that has just been told to behave like a considerably smaller Worser. Elsa promises to find it a much better hiding place. Soon. She runs up the stairs, checks carefully that Brit Marie is not lurking anywhere, and once she's sure she's not, rings the monster's doorbell. It doesn't open. She rings the bell again. Everything is silent. She groans and opens his letterbox and peers inside. All of the lights are out, but that doesn't dissuade her.
"I know you're there,"
she calls out. No one answers. Elsa takes a deep breath.
"If you don't open, I'll sneeze right inside, and I've got a mega cop,"
she starts to say threateningly, before a hiss interrupts her from behind, like someone trying to make a cat jump down from a table. She spins round. The monster steps out of the shadows on the stairs. She can't understand how such a huge person can make himself invisible all the time. He's rubbing his hands together, turning the skin around his knuckles red.
"Don't sneeze! Don't sneeze!"
he implores anxiously.
"I need to borrow your computer, because I think George could be at home, and I can't surf on my mobile because the display is screwed because Granny had a Fanta and toaster-related incident with it."
The hood over the monster's head moves slowly from side to side.
"No computer."
"Just let me borrow it, so I can check the address,"
Elsa whines, waving Granny's letter in the air. The monster shakes his head again.
"Fine, just give me your Wi-Fi password then so I can connect my iPad,"
she manages to say, rolling her eyes until it feels as if her pupils are out of position when she stops.
"I don't have 3G on the iPad because Dad bought the iPad and Mum got pissed because she didn't want me to have such expensive stuff and she doesn't like Apple, so it was a compromise. It's complicated, okay? I only need to borrow your Wi-Fi, that's all. Good God!"
"No computer," repeats the monster.
"No computer,"
Elsa repeats with extreme disbelief. The monster shakes his head.
"You don't have a computer."
The hood moves from side to side. Elsa peers at him as if he's having her on, is clinically insane, or both.
"How can you not have a computer?"
The monster produces a small sealed plastic bag from one of his jacket pockets, and inside it is a small bottle of Alcogel. Carefully he squeezes out some of its contents and starts rubbing it into his palms and skin.
"Don't need computer," he growls.
Elsa takes a deep, irritated breath and takes a look around the stairs. George may still be at home, so she can't go inside because then he'll ask why she's not at school, and she can't go to Maud and Leonard because they're too kind to lie, so if Mum asks if they've seen Elsa, they'll tell her the truth. The boy with a syndrome and his mum aren't here in the daytime, and forget Brit Marie, which doesn't exactly leave a wealth of possibilities. Elsa collects herself and tries to think about how a knight of Miamis is never afraid of a treasure hunt, even if it's difficult. And then she goes up the stairs. Alf opens the door after the seventh ring. His flat smells of wood shavings. He's wearing a sorry excuse for a dressing gown, and the remaining hairs on his head look like the last tottering bits of buildings after a hurricane. He's holding a large white cup on which it says, "Juventus," and there's a smell of coffee, strong like Granny always drank it.
"After Alf has made coffee, you have to drive standing up all morning," she used to say,
and Elsa didn't quite know what she meant, although she understood what she was saying.
"Yes," he grunts.
"You know where this is,"
says Elsa, and holds out the envelope with Granny's handwriting on it.
"Are you waking me up to ask about a bloody address?"
answers Alf, in every way inhospitably before taking a big gulp of coffee.
"Were you still sleeping?"
Alf takes another mouthful and nods at his wristwatch.
"I'll drive the late shift. This is night time for me.
Do I come to your flat in the middle of the night to ask you random questions?" Elsa looks at the cup. Looks at Alf.
"If you're asleep, why are you drinking coffee?"
Alf looks at the cup, looks at Elsa, looks totally puzzled. Elsa shrugs.
"Do you know where this is or not?"
she asks, and points at the envelope. Alf looks a little as if he's repeating her question to himself inside his head, in a very exaggerated and contemptuous tone. Has another sip of coffee.
"I've been a taxi driver for more than 30 years.
And?" wonders Elsa.
And so, of course, I bloody know where that is. It's by the old waterworks, he says, then drains his cup.
What?
Alf looks resigned.
Young people and their lack of history, I tell you, where the rubber factory was until they moved it again and the brickyard.
Elsa's expression gives away the possibility that she doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. Alf claws at the remains of his hair and disappears into the flat, comes back with a topped-up cup of coffee and a map, puts down the coffee cup with a slam on a shelf in the hall and marks the map with a thick ring using a biro.
Oh, there! That's where the shopping centre is. Why didn't you just say?
Alf says something that Elsa can't quite make out and closes the door in her face.
I'll keep the map,
Elsa hollers cheerfully into his letterbox. He doesn't answer.
It's the Christmas holidays, if you're wondering. That's why I'm not at school,
she calls out. He doesn't answer that either. The worse is lying on its side with two legs comfortably stretched up into the air when Elsa walks into the storage unit, as if it has very gravely misunderstood a Pilates exercise. The monster is standing in the passage outside, rubbing his hands. He looks very uncomfortable. Elsa holds up the envelope to him.
Be coming.
The monster nods. The hood glides away a few inches from his face, and the big scar gleams momentarily in the fluorescent light. He doesn't even ask where they're going. It's difficult not to feel a pang of affection for him. Elsa looks first at him, and then at the worse. She knows that Mom is going to be angry with her for skiving and going off without permission, but when Elsa asks her why she's always so worried about her, Mom always says, "Because I'm so bloody afraid something may happen to you." But Elsa is having a pretty hard time thinking that anything can happen to you when you have a monster and a worse tagging along. So she feels it should be okay, given the circumstances. The worse tries to lick the monster when it walks out of the storage unit. The monster jumps in terror and snatches back his hand and grabs a broom leaning up against another storage unit. The worse, as if it's teasing and having a bit of a laugh, sweeps its tongue back and forth in long, mischievous movements.
Drop it,
Elsa tells it. The monster holds out the broom like a lance and tries to force the worse back by pushing the bristles into its nose.
I said, drop it!
Elsa snaps at both of them. The worse closes its jaws round the broom and crunches it to smithereens.
Drop it!
Elsa begins but doesn't have time to finish the last it before the monster has thrown both broom and worse across the cellar with all his might, sending the heavy animal crashing hard into the wall several meters away. The worse rolls up and flexes its body in one movement and is in the middle of a terrifying spring before it's even landed. Its jaws are open and rows of kitchen knife-sized teeth exposed. The monster faces it with a broad chest and the blood pumping in his fists.
Cut it out, I said,
Elsa roars, throwing her little body right between the two furious creatures, unprotected between claws as sharp as spears and fists probably big enough to separate her head from her shoulders. She stands her ground, armed with nothing but the indifference of an almost 8-year-old to her own physical shortcomings, which goes a long way. The worse stops itself mid-leap and lands softly beside her. The monster takes a few steps back. Slowly, muscles relax and lungs release air. Neither of them meet her gaze.
The idea here is that you're supposed to protect me,
Elsa says in a quieter voice, trying not to cry, which doesn't go so terrifically well.
I've never had any friends, and now you two try to kill the only two I've ever had just after I found you.
The worse lowers its nose. The monster rubs his hands, disappears into his hood and makes a rocking motion towards the worse.
Started it,
the monster manages to say. The worse growls back. Stop it. She tries to sound angry but realizes she mainly just sounds as if she's crying. The monster, concerned, moves the palm of his hand up and down along her side as close as possible without actually touching her.
Sorry,
he mumbles. The worse buffets her shoulder. She rests her forehead against its nose.
We have an important mission here, so you can't keep messing about. We have to deliver this letter because I think Granny wants to say sorry to someone else. And there are more letters. This is our fairy tale, to deliver every single one of Granny's sorries.
With her face in the worser's fur, she inhales deeply and closes her eyes.
We have to do it for my mum's sake, because I'm hoping that the last sorry will be to her.
Chapter 16. Dust. It turns into an epic adventure, a monstrous fairy tale. Elsa decides they should begin by taking the bus, like normal knights on normal quests in more or less normal fairy tales when there aren't any horses or cloud animals available. But when all the other people at the bus stop start eyeing the monster, and the worse, and nervously shuffling as far away from them as it's possible to be without ending up at the next bus stop, she realizes it's not going to be quite so straightforward. On boarding the bus, it becomes immediately clear that worsers are not all that partial to travelling by public transport. After it snuffled about and stepped on people's toes and overturned bags with its tail, and accidentally dribbled a bit on a seat a little too close to the monster for the monster to feel entirely comfortable, Elsa decides to forget the whole thing. And then all three of them get off, exactly one stop later. Elsa pulls the Gryffindor scarf tighter round her face, pushes her hands into her pockets, and leads them through the snow. The worse is so delighted about escaping the bus that it skips in circles around Elsa and the monster like an overexcited puppy. The monster looks disgusted. He doesn't seem used to being outdoors by daylight, Elsa notices. Maybe it's because Wolfheart is used to living in the dark forests outside Miamis where the daylight doesn't dare penetrate. At least that is where he lives in Granny's fairy tales, so if there is any sort of order to this story, this must surely be the logical explanation. People who see them on the pavement react as people generally do when they catch sight of a girl, a worse, and a monster, strolling along side by side. They cross the street. Some of them try to pretend that it has nothing to do with the fact that they are scared of monsters and worses and girls by demonstratively pretending to be having loud telephone conversations with someone who suddenly gives them different directions and tells them to go the opposite way. That is also what Elsa's dad does sometimes when he's gone the wrong way and he doesn't want strangers to realize he's one of those types who go the wrong way. Elsa's mum never has that problem, because if she goes the wrong way, she just keeps going until whoever she was supposed to be meeting has to follow her. Granny used to solve the problem by shouting at the road signs. It varies how people deal with it. But others who run into the adventuring trio are not as discreet, and they watch Elsa from the other side of the road as if she's being abducted. Elsa feels that the monster would probably be good at many things, but a kidnapper who can be put out of action by sneezing at him would probably not be a particularly effective kidnapper. It's a curious sort of Achilles heel for a superhero, she feels. Snot. The walk takes more than 2 hours. Elsa wishes it was Halloween, because then they could take the bus without scaring normal people. Everyone would just assume they were dressed up. That's why Elsa likes Halloween. On Halloween, it's normal to be different. It's almost lunchtime by the time they find the right address. Elsa's feet hurt, and she's hungry and in a bad mood. She knows that a knight of Miamis would never whine or be afraid of a grand adventure when sent out on a treasure hunt, but whoever said a knight can't be hungry or ill-tempered? There's a high-rise at the address, but also a hamburger restaurant across the street. Elsa tells the worse and the monster to wait, and she goes across even though she has firm moral objections to hamburger chains, as every almost 8-year-old should. But even almost 8-year-olds can't eat their principles. So she grudgingly buys ice cream for the worse, a hamburger for the monster, and a veggie burger for herself. And as she sneaks out, she gets out her red felt-tip pen and crosses out the dash between lunch and menu. Despite the below-zero temperature clawing at their faces, they sit on a bench opposite the high-rise building. Or rather, Elsa and the worse sit, because the monster looks at the bench as if it's also about to lick him. He refuses to even touch the greaseproof paper round his hamburger, so the worse eats that as well. At one point, the worse drops a bit of his ice cream on the bench and licks it up without concern, and the monster looks close to asphyxiation. After the worse takes a bite of Elsa's burger and she carries on eating it regardless, she has to help him breathe from a paper bag. When they're finally done, Elsa leans her head back and looks up the facade of the building. It must be 15 floors high. She takes the envelope from her pocket, slides off the bench and marches inside. The monster and the worse follow her in silence, surrounded by a strong smell of alcohol. Elsa quickly scans the board of residence on the wall and finds the name as written on the envelope, though preceded by the words, Reg, psychotherapist. Elsa doesn't know what that means, but she's heard a good deal about therapists letting off bombs and causing all sorts of trouble, so a psychotherapist must be even worse. She heads over to the lift at the other end of the corridor. The worse stops when they get there and refuses to take another step. Elsa shrugs and goes in. The monster follows her, after a certain amount of hesitation, though he is careful not to touch any of the walls. Elsa evaluates the monster as they're going up. His beard sticks out of the hood like a large, curious squirrel, which makes him seem less and less dangerous the longer she knows him. The monster clearly takes note of her examination of him, and he twists his hands uncomfortably. To her own surprise, Elsa realizes that his attitude hurts her feelings.
If it bothers you so much, you could just stay on guard downstairs with the worse, you know. It's not like something's going to happen to me while I'm handing over a letter to the therapist.
She talks in normal language because she refuses to speak in the secret language to him. Her jealousy about Granny's language not even being Granny's from the very beginning hasn't gone away.
Anyway, you don't have to be right beside me the whole time to be able to guard me, she says,
sounding more resentful than she means to. She'd started thinking of the monster as a friend, but remembers now that he's only here because Granny told him. The monster just stands there in silence. When the elevator doors glide open, Elsa marches out ahead of him. They pass rows of doors until they find the therapist's door. Elsa knocks so hard she actually hurts her knuckles. The monster backs off towards the wall on the other side of the narrow corridor, as if he realizes that the person on the other side of the door may peer through the spy hole. He seems to be trying to make himself as small and unfrightening as possible. It's hard not to find this endearing, thinks Elsa, even if unfrightening is not a proper word. Elsa knocks on the door again, puts her ear against the lock. Another knock. Another silence.
Empty, says the monster, slowly.
No shit, Sherlock.
She really doesn't mean to be angry with him because it's Granny she's angry with. She's just tired, so very, very tired. She looks around and catches sight of two wooden chairs.
They must be out for lunch. We'll have to wait, she says, glumly, and drops despondently into one of the chairs.
As far as Elsa is concerned, the silence goes from pleasant to hard work to unbearable in about 1.5 eternities. And when she's occupied herself with everything she's been able to come up with, drumming her fingers against the tabletop, poking out all the stuffing from the chair cushion through a little hole in the fabric, and carving her name into the soft wood of the armrest with the nail of her index finger, she shatters the silence with one of those questions that sound much more accusing than she means it to be.
Why do you wear soldier's trousers if you're not a soldier?
The monster breathes slowly under his hood.
Old trousers.
Have you been a soldier?
The hood moves up and down.
War is wrong and soldiers are wrong. Soldiers kill people.
Not that sort of soldier, the monster intones.
There's only one sort of soldier.
The monster doesn't answer. Elsa carves a swear word into the wood of the armrest using her nail. In actual fact, she doesn't want to ask the question that's burning inside of her because she doesn't want the monster to know how wounded she is. But she can't stop herself. It's one of Elsa's big problems, they say at school, that she can never control herself.
Was it you who showed my granny my amus, or was it granny who showed you?
She spits out the words. The hood doesn't move, but she can see him breathing. She's just about to repeat the question when she hears from the inside of it.
Your granny showed. As a child.
He says it the way he says everything in the normal language, as if the words come bickering out of his mouth.
You are about my age,
Elsa says, thinking of the photos of the werewolf boy. The hood moves up and down.
Did she tell you fairy tales?
She asks quietly, and wishes he'd say no, even though she knows better. The hood moves up and down.
Did you meet during a war? Is that why she called you Wolfheart?
She really doesn't want to ask any more because she can feel her jealousy growing, but the hood continues to nod.
Camp. Camp for the one who flees.
A refugee camp. Did Granny bring you here with her? Was she the one who arranged it so you could live in the flat?
There's a long exhalation from the hood.
Lived in many places. Many homes.
Foster homes.
He nods.
Why didn't you stay there?
The hood moves from side to side very slowly.
Bad homes. Dangerous. Your granny came to get me.
Why did you become a soldier? Was it so you could go to the same places as Granny?
He nods.
Did you also want to help people like she does?
Slowly the hood moves up and down.
Why didn't you become a doctor like Granny then?
The monster rubs his hands together.
Blood. Don't like blood.
Smart idea to become a soldier. Are you an orphan?
The hood is still. The monster is silent, but she notices that the beard withdraws even deeper into the darkness. Suddenly Elsa nods exuberantly to herself.
Like the X-Men!
She exclaims with more enthusiasm than she's really willing to give away. Then she clears her throat, composes herself.
X-Men are mutants, and many X-Men are sort of orphans. It's quite cool.
The hood doesn't move. Elsa pulls out some more stuffing from the chair cushion and feels stupid. She was about to add that Harry Potter was also an orphan, and to be like Harry Potter in any way at all is actually the coolest thing there is. But she's starting to realize that the monster probably doesn't read as much quality literature as one might hope.
Is Miamis a word in the secret language? She asks instead. I mean, is it a word in your language? It doesn't sound like other words in the secret language. I mean, your language.
The hood doesn't move, but the words come more softly now. Not like all the other words from the monster, which all seem to be on their guard. These sound almost dreamy.
Mama's language. Miamis. My. Mama's language.
Elsa looks up and gazes intently into the darkness inside the hood.
Did you not have the same language?
The hood moves from side to side.
Where did your mother come from?
Asks Elsa.
Other place. Other war.
What does Miamis mean, then?
The words come out like a sigh.
I love.
So it was your kingdom. That's why it was called Miamis. It wasn't at all because I called pajamas majamas.
Elsa pulls out the last bit of stuffing and rolls it into a ball to distract herself from her churning jealousy. Typical bloody granny thing, making up Miamis for you so you'd know your mother loved you, she mumbles, abruptly silencing herself when she realizes she's saying it aloud. The monster shifts his weight from foot to foot, breathing more slowly, rubbing his hands.
Miamis. Not made up. Not pretend. Not for a little one. Miamis. For real. For children.
And then, while Elsa closes her eyes to avoid showing her agreement, he goes on tentatively.
In letter, grandmother's apology was apology to mother.
He whispers from under his hood. Elsa's eyes open and she frowns.
What?
The monster's chest heaves up and down.
You asked about Granny's letter, what Granny wrote apology to my mother. We never found my mother.
Their eyes meet halfway, on different terms. A tiny but mutual respect is created between them there and then, as Miamasians. Elsa realizes that he's telling her what was in the letter because he understands what it's like when people have secrets from you just because you're a child. So she sounds considerably less angry when she asks,
"Did you look for your mother?"
The hood moves up and down.
"For how long?"
"Always. Since the camp." Elsa's chin drops slightly.
"So that's why Granny was always going off on all these trips?"